Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as
Beyonce screaming bisexual rights in her new album Renaissance.
It's the rebirth of queerness, you know. She changed everything.
Beyonce thought she was slick using those she her pronouns and thick. She said she thought she was killing that shit. I told her to go harder. And I was like, wait, who you talking, girl?
Does she think she was being slick? I think she was being obvious. She was like, I'm here, I'm queer, and so is my uncle.
Yes. This was Beyonce's soft launch of her own bisexuality. And you know what? Bisexual rights at CYC Podcasts.
What up, Corona?
What's popping, Chingona? We're back. Happy late birthday.
Thanks. God, it's been like 500 years. I don't know what happened. A summer hiatus, I guess.
I mean, it's like nothing was out and now everything's out at the same time.
Yeah, I'm a little like inundated here and I'm just, yeah, I was gone for a little while too. And we had such good plans too for some stuff, but, you know, COVID happened.
Yes. So.
Yeah, and not that either of us got it again, thank God, but it happened around us.
Yes, it was super close, so we had to be really safe, and we have like a fun episode coming soon. But yeah, I'm glad that you're okay, and I'm glad everyone else is okay, because it is not over.
For fucking real, bro. Dude. Yeah, I'm excited though for what did come out of it anyways. You Patreon listeners, you'll figure it out sooner than later.
But yeah, it'll come to you sooner. But yeah, I'm super excited about that. And dude, everything came out. Did you see bodies?
No pun intended. I did see bodies. Yeah, definitely something to chat about later. I don't know if we're gonna cover it or not. We haven't gone there yet, but
it was very, yeah, very queer.
It was bodies.
Ankles. Sure.
I didn't know what to expect with it, to be honest. And yeah, I didn't get what I was expecting. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily in a bad way, just, you know, I got the wrong vibes off of it.
Oh, really? I mean, I didn't know what to expect either, because I mean, I had never really heard of this director, and it was a lot of people that I loved individually.
Lena fucking drama, dude.
Oh my god. Okay, I do want to talk about that. So, to clue y'all in here on the pod, there is a New York Times editor who gave a not so nice review of Bodies, calling it a 95-minute advertisement for cleavage when I can't even remember what boobs were out.
Literally.
Honestly.
When I read that, I was like, what the fuck were you looking at?
What cleavage?
Yeah, I was looking at blood and
gore,
guts, okay,
and like hilarious like lines delivered by Rachel Sennett. But like, I have no idea. I don't remember any like boobs. Like, I was like, what boobs, dude?
I watched Love Island, so you don't like seeing cleavage. Like, I'm just completely desensitized, because like, I just didn't give a shit about that. I don't know why you would even mention that in a review.
It was weird. It was a weird thing to say in a review, and especially for it to be a New York Times review. But the recent drama is that I think her name's Lena Wilson they've like discovered that she's a nepotism baby, that her father's also a New York Times editor.
Yikes.
And that's why everyone's coming for her now, and I think she's even at this point deleted all her social media, which good for her. It's good to be off social media, because honestly, if I would have received that DM, I would have been like, I'm going to show this to all my closest friends and brag about it. Because I'd be like, wow, she read my review.
Also, I wouldn't she's in my DMs. Like,
she in my DMs. Hi. But I wouldn't say it out like in public. I'd be like, this one's for me. I'm keeping this. But also,
I certainly
like,
wouldn't try to victimize myself like
publicly like that.
Yeah.
That's so weird. It's so
like,
weird.
She didn't even call you out publicly, and you called yourself out publicly. You ruined your own life.
You ruined your own shit there. It was like, dude, I mean, they kind of had a point, because like, at what point? I don't even remember boobs. Me and my friends went together in a big group of like, no one saw a boob. I don't think any of us remember a chest. I'm like, what? Like, what chest? Like, I remembered everything they were saying, but I have no clue what they were wearing. It was normal. It wasn't even like,
yeah,
it was a pool party. Like, I don't even think like that was like too much. I think that's what people wear to swim, you know, whatever. I didn't even remember.
That was wild. Yeah. Well, you know, there's not a good Lena out here, man. We're struggling.
Amanla, if you want to talk shit about me after you listen to this podcast, I'd love it. I would never expose you like that. Also, I would never have said such a weird thing about you. But if you want to criticize CYC, feel free to email us and I will keep it to myself. I mean, yeah. We've gotten like, you know, negative shit before, and you know, it's very easy to ignore. Like, I don't understand. I don't care who it is. Like, she's gonna bully you. How's she bullying you privately? Bullying is like Nicki Minaj stance. Like, but this is not what that, you know? So
yeah.
Way to embarrass
sometimes
yourself.
Like, yeah, sometimes people are so privileged that like they completely have no idea what it is to actually be marginalized. They have no idea what it is to be actually like talked down. Like, they don't know. They don't understand. Like, they have so much privilege that any minor inconvenience, like, they will be like, oh, I'm being oppressed. Like,
I mean silenced.
No, you're not. Shut the fuck up. I will silence you.
You work at New York Times, bro. You get paid to like spit shit out. We do this shit like
for free.
Shout out mostly. To the Patreon. Yeah, mostly for the free. And I don't think I've said some pretty shitty things in the past too. I completely agree and been completely wrong. But, you know, I own up to that shit. I think it's Lena's turn to own up to being like, yo, you know what? Sometimes I'm a shitty person and I do shitty things. And that's, you know what? That's okay, too. But,
you know, I had no plans to talk this long about this woman. Oh.
No, but dude, this person, Lena has like a history of like saying things about like POC movies, like Candyman. She said something kind of crazy. Queen and Slim, she said something kind of crazy, and it's like really directed towards like black films, not necessarily like films with black people in them, at least. It looked really bad on her part, and you don't have to like something, but you don't necessarily, especially when you're that privileged, maybe keep those. Like, we didn't review Queen and Slim here. No, we did not. We didn't talk about Candyman. We didn't talk about any of those movies. Like, no, thank you. We are not the people you go to for that opinion, honestly. If you want that, go listen to like Bag Ladies. Go listen to like literally an actual black woman instead of us. So
we literally talk about things that we admire, you know?
Like, yes.
And there's a lot of things. There's fucking a lot of things on my list of the things that I was going to talk about in this banter that I really, really liked.
Let's get into it.
No. I mean, like, you know, just to your point, you know, there's so much good shit out there right now. Mm-hmm. Reservation Dogs is back.
Oh.
Absolutely killing the game. And, dude, like, Hulu in general just killing it. This Fool came out.
This Fool is perfect. I've never seen so seen. I'm so seen, dude.
Yeah, like, when was the last time? Like, that main character, I can't remember the last time or if I've ever seen a character like that, you know?
No, I don't think we've ever seen a character like that. Like, he's so interesting. And, like, I'm obsessed with this Fool. Like, that, even that is, like, an inside cultural thing. Like, this
Fool. Yeah, this Fool.
This Fool.
Yeah. Like, they're also killing it on Hulu with Prey, which I don't know how that shit didn't come out on a theatrical release.
Oh my god, I saw that last night, dude. 5 pandulces. Like,
it was great. It was wonderful. Amazing. Like, yeah. Like,
is that how like white guys feel when they watch Captain America? Like, is that how I felt? Like,
that's how they feel when they watch
anything?
Gladiator? I don't know.
They watch literally any kind of media. Like, I'm like, wow. I felt that once in my life watching Prey. Like, wow. So good. 5 pandulces.
Fucking good. And you know, there's a few other things that are out, like Paper Girls. I won't get into it right now.
Yes, it's on Amazon Prime. Y'all go watch it. Go do that now, please. Go watch Paper Girls, y'all. Get it together.
I also watched House of the Dragon, and the real ones know. If you know, you know why I'm watching that shit to the end.
I know why you're watching it. And you know why? I didn't even watch that show because, shout out to Lesbian Twitter, I saw a clip and I was like, yeah, I know. This is why you're watching it. This is why Mike is watching it. And you know what? I might have to watch it for that reason. But
it's pretty good. It's not so bad.
But then they showed a face of that guy with the face. What is his name?
The Doctor Who guy?
The Doctor Who guy. Like, the famous guy who looks like a smushed potato. You know, shout out to him, though. He's on TV and I'm not. So he's an actor and I'm not. So clearly someone likes his face. It just isn't me, you know. But congratulations to him. I'm such a hater. Harley Quinn is back. Season 3 on HBO Max. Have you been watching it?
I watched the first few episodes. Yeah. Yeah, I did.
I really like it. It's cute. It's a cute one.
It is. It's cute. It's cute. Yeah. Very, like, low stakes in comparison to the rest of these.
Yeah. Reservation Dogs is making me cry.
I've also turned into, like, a soccer stan recently because I've been watching, like, Angel City games. And now pretty much every NWSL game. But I ended up watching this documentary called The Only. Have you heard of it?
I have not. Tell me about it.
It's, like, it's on Paramount. And it's basically a documentary about... the national American women's team goalkeeper, like from a couple, like maybe like 10 years ago, maybe a little bit more, but she was like the only Black player at the time, I think, on the team. Maybe it was longer. It's definitely longer than 10 years, but yeah, it's basically about her and like how, I mean, even now they're not paid very well, you know, and like there isn't always a women direction. Yeah, like it was tough. It's tough now, but it was even worse back then, to the point where she was like really financially struggling after like no longer playing for the national women's team. And yeah, just kind of like how she went like unrecognized and how like race definitely had a lot to do with, you know, her experience and stuff. And but how she ended up being like a huge inspiration for a whole generation of Black soccer players, you know, who are women joining the league. And like, you know, now you watch the NWSL and it's a whole different story. So it was really inspirational, and yeah, you guys should watch it. It was really, really beautiful. And she's back on track. She's coaching Washington Spirit, I think is their name.
Oh wow.
So I'm so happy for her. Like, and she's queer. I should have mentioned that to the begin with.
Yeah, that's
like,
yeah,
no surprise, it's a national fucking US team. But
I'm trying. You said you were gonna start a stan account. You should do it. I support you making fan cams of soccer players. Like,
God, I feel like I don't even have that in me. I feel like it would be me talking shit the whole time. Like, no era penal. You know what I mean?
Oh, so you're like the stans on K-pop Twitter that are fighting the other stans. I see. I see.
Or I don't know. I think I would just like to comment on commentary, the gameplay. You know, I don't know. I've started following like certain like soccer commentary accounts, and they follow several different leagues, but I feel like mine would be just NWSL if I went that route.
Okay.
Maybe yeah, also national teams, but you know.
See, I like how you're into like soccer and I'm into like basketball. The Dallas, oh fuck, what are they called? The Wings. Oh my God. It's because you said Spirit. I'm like thinking of Spirit Airlines now. I don't know, but the Wings are playing in the playoffs. I don't know if they're gonna win, but you know what, who cares? I'm watching that shit. It's fun. And hey, Brittany Griner is still in fucking Russia.
What the fuck, bro?
And apparently Dennis Rodman is gonna go save the day. You know what, this is like a bad Dave Chappelle joke. Like, that's just, you know, can we get Ja Rule on the line? Is like, can we get Dennis Rodman on the line to go? I mean, if Kim Kardashian,
get off your ass, man. You're doing this law school thing. Go get our girl.
Come on, yeah. Kim Kardashian. No, but really, I don't care at this point.
Dennis
anyone.
Rodman, like, that is pretty random. But yeah, somebody needs to fucking do something. Since
Dennis Rodman, Kim Kardashian, whoever it takes, I don't care. Just fucking bring her back on some stupid fucking charge.
Yeah.
Dumb we know what fuck. It is. We know what it is. She's a Black queer woman. And if it takes Dennis Rodman, then you know what? He's got a new... I mean, he's already from South Oak Cliff. Okay, what's up? What's up? What's good? He's from where I'm from. So you know what? He probably would go to Russia and make it happen. Fuck these politicians. Shout out Dennis Rodman. I hope he really does it. That would be like, I would buy anything he sold after that. I'd be like, that's my dude. He's from where I'm from. Like, let's go, Dennis Rodman.
And I hope that really brings up the conversation of like, you know, you guys literally are not playing these people enough. Like these... like we as women's national teams and, you know, whatever local teams, like
they have to go.
Why did she have to go to freaking Russia
to fucking play a game that like in during like a really interesting international affairs time? Like, she shouldn't have to go out there to fucking make money. Like, it's bullshit, but we know what it is. Again, it's just straight up sexism in sports.
You know, a lot of the national women's teams players for the U.S. they, like, the vast majority of them now are playing for the Women's Soccer League here in the U.S., which is great, right? We only have a couple of them out in, like, fucking Paris and shit. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, that's fucking great. Like, why can't we be more like that? I mean, obviously, they still need to get paid more. But, like, not having to go to, like, friggin' Russia to, like, play, to make money.
Of all places. Let's not go there. You know, let's not go to places where they scan your eyeball and then you can, might not be able to come back.
Or they're mad racist. Like, no.
Oof. Yeah. Also mad racist, mad homophobic. Like, let's not combine those two. Because let's not play with that. It's illegal to be black and gay over there. It's hella illegal just to be a person. So, shout out to that, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, speaking of that, I think that leads sports right into what we're yay, sports. That should be the whole episode, like, subtitle, like, the not the main title, but, you know, underneath. Yay, sports. So what are we talking about today, Maite?
Talking about sports. I'm going to be talking about, well, we're both going to be talking about both of these things, but A League of Their Own came out, the TV series. Very exciting, but also we've been meaning to talk about another topic for quite a while.
Yes, shout out Las Bravas, which is actually talking about, oddly enough, we were just talking about it, women playing football, but in Mexico. It's a Mexican show, so I'm pretty excited to see how both of these things are interpreted extremely different, because man, are they different, but kind of but similar.
Not that much, you know.
No, I mean, yes, yeah, it's all there and it's pretty cool. So would you like me to go first?
Yeah, but Bravas came out a while ago, so, and League of Your Own is brand spanking new, so stay tuned.
So I'm gonna be covering Las Bravas, which is the HBO Max show. It came out this year in 2022. It's created by a writer, director, producer called Flippy. I think that's like his like name, his AKA, his alias. It's an 8-episode long series on HBO Max. I think it's shot completely in Mexico, and it's like supposed to be shot in Acapulco, and there's a lot of scenes of the coast. The third coast was good. And they're actually, fun fact, I think they actually had a lot of consulting from, I think, a team called Las Dragonas, and a lot of, like, actual professional women athletes, women football players in Mexico, to help consult and teach them how to play. And they did that for a couple months before they started. Some of the girls, this group of girls, had never played before, so I think that's really interesting. It's starring, and a lot of the things that about this show is that it is kind of centered around the men, and their character development versus necessarily Las some Bravas. Of it is it's not as centered around the girls as much as you thought it would be, even though it's called Las Bravas Football Club. But we take what we get, which is crumbs, but in this case it's like a big loaf versus a crumb. It's still just not a full meal. It's almost there, you know. It's like missing a side.
It's like a sandwich.
It's like a sandwich, yeah, with no chips, you know, just a sandwich. It's one torta. And it's starring an interesting cast, an ensemble cast. The lead, which is played by Roberto Casas, he's played by Mauricio Ochman. I apologize if I said that wrong. I apologize. His co-head coach, don't forget the co-head coach, also named Mauricio Barrientos, plays Sebas. Claudia, she's like the goalie. She's the Memo Ochoa of the whole team. We love her. played by Ana Valeria Becerril. And then Flor is amazing. She plays a mother and a very cool mom and also a teacher of the girls. Her name is Iran Castillo. And then we have Renata, who works in the bar in the town. Her name's Ana Jimenez Villanueva. Ooh, girl, that's a name.
Villanueva?
Villanueva. I want to say it's Villanueva, but again.
Yeah, it's Villanueva.
Villanueva. I don't know why. I probably have a typo in there. Anyways, so this show centers around a disgraced, kind of arrogant Premier League soccer player. His name is Roberto Casas. He's kind of like the Messi of Mexico, but like, you know, God forbid, he's not Argentinian, but he kind of gets treated like Argentinian. If you know, you know. But once he gets to Mexico, but he's he had to stop playing premier football in Europe, in Spain, specifically because of heart problems. And, you know, his life crumbles in front of him. And you see his money fucking and fame just kind of, well, his fame is still there, but you see his money just like waste away. And he goes into debt with the Spanish government, very much like Shakira. he's literally going through the same thing. And
literally, but less dramatically, probably.
Free Shakira, you know? Free our
She's
baby.
Not from Spain. Spain owes her more than she owes Spain.
Let's exactly. Like, you know, where's fucking anyone else? Lock them up, you know? Like... Free my girl Shakira, okay? She don't owe y'all nothing. If she wanted to keep her money, that's her business, okay? But anyways, he's fallen into major debt, and he's negotiating prison time, and, you know, because he can no longer make money, so he's having to find a way to figure all this out, his financial situation, his life, now that he's can't play, you know, soccer anymore. He finds out that his hometown in Acapulco is going to make a statue in his honor. So he's like, well, fuck it. You know, he's going to go back to home while he tries to figure out everything. And what he soon finds out is that he gets treated like any Argentinian soccer player would in Mexico, with much hate.
Because he's a traidor.
He's a traitor. He betrayed his country. While he was in Spain, he did some shitty things, like decide to not play for the Mexican national team, which, I'm sorry, unforgivable. I totally understand why everyone thinks he's a traitor, because it's kind
he
of like
also,
when
like he just didn't play. He also didn't play for like the regular Liga MX, right? He went to go play for Premier League instead, which is like you know, European league.
Yeah, he didn't even want to play for the Mexican league. He thought he was too good for that.
Too good for America and Chivas, but like, yeah. Okay, I guess.
Oh, you're a Chivas person.
No, I knew that. I'm not.
Oh. I'm like, oh, I'm finding out a lot. No, you're good. And he soon finds himself like a solution to his like personal debt in Spain. He gets offered the position of head coach of Las Bravas, but... unbeknownst to him, he has no idea it's an actual women team. He thinks it's just the
Los Bravos,
which is, you know, formerly a non-existent team in this very small town in Acapulco, and the only people left to play are women. And I think that's super cool and awesome. He makes a deal with his long lost super rich millionaire Theo, who's on his deathbed, to it sounds like a novella, to you know, coach this team and get them to start winning games. And as long as he can get them to win, his debt will be forgiven. He'll pay it to the Spanish government himself, and he thinks he's found himself a solution. But instead, what he finds is that he's going to have to battle his own machismo, his own fucking arrogance, his fucking ignorance. And most of this show, although it is centered around very brilliant women, very strong women who challenge him at every step, I think the only like kind of flaw that so far in the plot is that a lot of it is centered around his development and his character arc and how he becomes less of a shitty, sexist, ignorant asshole. And although I love that, it's a self-aware show that can point out that he's an asshole at every corner. I still find him pretty likable, and I think that's one of the major differences between what you're going to be talking about and what I'm going to be talking about. What I'm talking about is that Las Bravas, although about a female soccer team, I feel like a lot of the screen time is given to Roberto Casas' role.
100.
And although I do like that, it is still very male-gazy and very much centered around, you know... one episode he fights, you know, his fucking ignorance on, you know, what I do like about the show and what he does fight, and they actually make a point of talking about, is like body inclusivity. Like, there is a like thicker girl on the team and she's amazing, and he's kind of like told to his face to fuck off, you know. She said, my body is my temple and you can fuck all the way off. And she's one of my favorite characters in the entire series. Because, you know, she's very powerful in her own body, within herself. And I think that's very fucking cool. Claudia, his, who he soon to find out that he's connected to in, you know, a very deep way, genetically. he reconnects with long lost family. He reconnects to himself. And although very endearing and very well told. You know, the show is, you know, funny. It's a fun way to spend some time, honestly. The jokes are, like, landing because a lot of the jokes are true to, like, Mexican culture. There's a lot of, like, what is it? Doble sentido, you know? Like, oh, that was so Spanglish of me. Double sentido.
Double entendre, yeah.
Double entendres. There's a lot of, like, you know, the humor is very Mexican. It's like, imagine Ted Lasso, but Mexican, you know? Yeah. So it's funnier to me.
Like, you know, flip the script, right? Because it's like an asshole coach instead of an overly nice coach.
Yes.
But yeah, like, you know, there's somebody gets changed and someone, you know, things improve. Yeah, I found myself rooting for everybody in that show, which is kind of what sports shows have going for them, is that they have a sense of wholesomeness and make you root for them a lot. So
yeah, like the show itself is actually very forward thinking and like their ideas of like feminism, women in sports, sexism that he has to combat himself. I think it's very interesting, and I feel like, you know, instead of a call out, it's more like a call in to like men to watch this show, for men watching the show, instead of like, you know, a punch in the face, it's more like, hey, let me take you for a walk, dumbass, like you've been stupid and these are the reasons why. And but I do feel like, again, it's still very male-centered, and I think that's why I wanted to cover it, because although, yes, forward thinking feminism, yes, like women deserve this, women deserve that, their stories are kind of like told in the background in order to have this asshole character grow. And you know, there's so many good side characters that don't get enough screen time. His best friend, Sebas, is a queer man who comes out. And it was, although, you know, it was an entire trope even in this series, because when he comes out, everyone's like, we literally already knew and we love you anyways. But then there's even another episode where he has trouble coming out to his, you know, what looks like sexist machista father, who also always knew and always accepted him. So, and it's like in a turn of events, you know, the machistas in this show actually aren't that bad at the homophobia. They're just sexist, you know, like they're like, oh, wow, we're not homophobic. We're just sexist. Like, and like how that's better, but it's fine. I think that was interesting. I kind of think the first episode in which you start liking Roberto Casas' character, when you're like, oh, wait, like, you're not a homophobic, you're just fucking sexist and machista and backwards, but you're not, at least you're not homophobic. But this character has a very cute little love story, also told off screen, which, I mean, I guess, I would have liked to see him more and more in love in his relationship, more scenes between him and his partner, because, you know, it is like jaded love, and, you know, it's played for kicks. It's like all these characters and all these very serious, you know, things happening are kind of told in a very funny way. And I think that is a fun, easy way to talk about tough subjects, especially like when you're trying to tell it to a Mexican audience. And I think that's what the show does very well, is it understands who it's talking to. It understands it's talking to Mexican people. And I think that's really interesting and well done and well written for them to understand their audience. And I hope more people watch the show, honestly, because there's so many characters.
Hardly heard of it, yeah.
Yeah, like, as I haven't heard of too many people talking about this show, and I don't know if it's going to get, you know, renewed for season 2, although I feel like it will, but I don't know if
it'll just because it hasn't been canceled by now, and that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it hasn't been canceled.
For HBO Max, you know, you might watch it while you can, guys.
We'll see, yeah, watch it while you can. You might have to, like, you know, iWatchTVSeries.com or some bullshit to find the second season. But I think
the fucking first.
Look, I think it's great. I think it's a wonderful show. I, you know, if I had to give it anything, it would be like 4 tortas. Because, you know, it's lacking. It ain't got no chips. It's like a sandwich without, like, I don't know, chimichurri sauce or, like,
a sandwich. It does have some sauce, though, you gotta admit, because
it has plenty of flavor, but it's missing something.
Sebas is a not only a queer brown man, but he's also, you know, a thick man's, you know, fat representation. Oh, and yeah. There's another character, yeah. Tanya, who, like, exudes body confidence, and she's also a thick woman. And, like, when people talk shit to her, you know, she comes back at them like really fast and like earns a lot of respect like that. Not that she like, honestly, she should have built-in respect for her fucking body, but you know, people fucking suck. So I don't know, I give them a lot of props for the body positivity in them, mm-hmm. because that's not something that I see in anything.
It's rare. It's so rare. That's why I'm like, okay, you're right. Let me give it another for the way they did Tania's character, which is amazing. Because she didn't take no shit from no one, as she shouldn't. Like, I feel like that was a real representation of, like, a real woman, you know? Like, Tania's, like, a real woman. That's a bad bitch, and she's not going to be told any different. And I think that's really rare to see anywhere. And Seba's character also being, like, a bigger man. I didn't really even see him that big, though. I just liked his hair. Anyways, I see, I didn't even see him because I'm so gay.
Behind all that hair, yeah.
I didn't see his body because I was just like, he has such good hair. And I'm too gay to even like look at the rest of him. I'm just like, you have great hair, man. You should have no problem out here. and like, okay, 4.5 banduses. But, you know, everything kind of led up to Roberto Casas' character being the center, the lead. Everything was for him to be a better person, which, great, yay. But, you know, more of the women being badass. And there was a lot of that. And I hope for season two, more focus on his daughter and how she's gone to the dark side. I think that would be really interesting. And I would really want to know more about her character. Because there was, like, something budding, but it was nothing confirmed queer.
With Majo? Did you recognize Majo, by the way? Or, like...
Where is she from? Is she from the other novella? I was telling Glow. She's
actually not from something, but...
Isn't she from the other soccer novella that we saw?
I don't know, but what I... The thing is that when I was watching fucking season two of Rebelde, which came out recently...
That's her!
She was on there. When she was on there, I was looking at her like, where the fuck do I know her from? It was killing me. And I rewatched Las Bravas yesterday and I was like, it's fucking Majo, bro. Like, yeah. So she's a great actress. And, you know, if you haven't seen season two of Rebelde on Netflix, you should.
If you want to watch it.
I was kind of stoked on watching it because it was like pretty queer. So I don't know. It was a good like quick watch.
I really didn't like the second season. It didn't like, do that for me. Other than Majo, I saw her and I got so excited, but I didn't.
Yeah.
I told Glow I was obsessing. Like, I'm just Googling everything. Like, I've seen her before. What is she in? I need to know. You just solved, like, a 3-month
mystery, right?
You solved a mystery in my brain. Thank you so much.
I solved it for myself yesterday. Yeah. I don't know. I think these characters also have a lot of, like, potential. So, a season mm-hmm. two, oh my God, I'm, like, begging the gods at this point. Like, yeah. It would be great.
That would be amazing. And I mean, the show just has so much stuff that's like so inside to like Mexican culture, like La Jacqueline, like she has a whole show.
Oh my God.
Like La Jacqueline, like talk show. There's a whole scene where like people start worshiping a shadow that looks like a god. Like, y'all gotta watch this shit. Like, it's so spot on to Mexican culture and identity, and like it's so inside and real, and it's the most real representation of like Mexican culture I've seen. So I think, like, you know, fuck Rebelde is like made up fan fiction. I love it, but it's not.
Yeah,
like,
no, that's like the Glee of what we have going on. That's like Glee, and then we have like Las Bravas, which is real shit. It's really, really good.
It's you like don't even this have to like soccer, but for like Mexico.
Yeah. It's wonderful. Like, I highly recommend. The one thing that I hate, though, on HBO Max is that if you put Spanish subtitles, it's, like, Castellano Spanish, and they change all the, like, curse words and shit.
Oh, I'm like, really?
Fuck you. He said chingado. Not what is it? Joder. Or, like, joder. Coño.
Coño.
That's the other part, of like, that I really enjoyed about, like, as Roberto was becoming a better person, he was starting to get rid of all his, like, Spanish coño. Accent-y joder. Shit. Saying coño and, like... pronouncing his S's like a dumbass, you know, sounding like a fucking Slytherin and shit. So
his Spanish got so much more normal towards the end. But yeah, at the beginning you're like, what an asshole, he even talks like an asshole. But 4.5 panluces for this show. It's very close to perfect for me. I hope that we get to see a season two, that we can stream it, and I need y'all to go watch this show because, well, you know, yeah, centered around a dude. You can watch this with your family. It's like a fun little family-friendly intro to, like, all of it, you know? If you don't have to watch The Handmaiden with your parents, but you can watch Las Bravas with them, and they'll probably think it's okay, you know? 4.5 panluces. It was really, really good for me.
Yeah, it was great. Upon rewatch, I appreciated it even more. Like, I almost want to give it, like, no cafecitos, even though I 100% like need it to be about Las Bravas more than Roberto. Yeah. So I would say like literally just for Roberto's over screen time, like
that's where I had to take it off.
Half cafecito. Mm-hmm. Everything else, like excellent.
You got to take just a little bit off because of him.
Yeah.
Because your show, yeah. Oh my God. It does what I wish this one would have done, but it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. Anyways.
And it's, yeah, I mean, honestly, it's a, obviously it's a different world, a different time period, a different country, a different, like, everything. But actually, what's funny is that I went and watched A League of Their Own 1992, the film.
Oh, no.
Because I was like, you know, I have to know the source material after, like, listening to a number of interviews and stuff with the creators. Like, it's important. I mean, not important, but, it does make a difference to, like, understand. Have that knowledge. Yeah. And figure out why it's such a loved, like movie. Why it's kind of like a classic to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But what I realized while you were talking about Las Bravas is that A League of Their Own from 1992 is actually a lot like Las Bravas.
Yep, with the coach.
With the coach, because it kind of centers him and him being like this former amazing baseball player, mm-hmm. and begrudgingly coaching a women's team that he doesn't think are real athlete. Literally, the parallels are like
exactly
almost,
the same.
Almost exact. Mm-hmm. Yeah, except, you know, this guy's like obviously it being like way back in the day, way worse when it comes to his misogyny and like all that stuff. But yeah, so a lot of similarities actually with the original League of Your Own and Las Bravas. However, luckily it's 2022 and mm-hmm. The League of Their Own, the TV show now, is a lot better. Yeah, so I mean, I have to give credit where credit is due, though. The original had Gina Davis starring in it, and she was able to overshadow a group of actors, including Tom Hanks, Madonna, and Rosie O'Donnell.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're paying respect here.
Shout out to her, queen.
Yeah, but both of the leagues, they're actually based in real-life stories of, like, the women's baseball league that was created because men were off to war. So there's a lot of, like, realness to what this story is centered on. And while the original story was mainly about a pair of sisters, a pitcher and a catcher, you know what I'm saying? And, yeah, so and there's like, a lot more of a presence in the movie of men. There's just a bunch of them. There's the coach, there's the guy that recruited them, there's the guys that are around them, there's even one of the players, like, little kid son who's like they're fucking being a little asshole, like men are just asshole across the board. But what the creators did with that original film was, you know, which we can relate to, is overly analyze and obsess over the movie and catch on to all these little tiny moments, these scenes that you could like blink and miss them, that were full of potential for like storytelling. And literally from that and from just like going crazy upon history, like they kind of came up with the story. The creators being Will Graham and Abby Jacobson. Abby, you guys know from Broad City.
Abby.
Both of them are openly queer. And Will came to Abby with the project when she was still on Broad City. This has been in the works for years. And yeah, they kind of came to the conclusion that, you know, we don't want to replicate this movie. We want to, you know, we want to explore what could not be covered in 1992. Mm-hmm. And like, I was a little misled because I was listening to these interviews and, you know, they kept saying, we don't want to replicate A League of Their Own, which they didn't. But visually and aesthetically, like, they did an amazing job, right? Like, mm-hmm. The uniforms look like the old uniforms. The towns look like the old uniforms. They dressed them. Yeah, they did really, really well. But the one thing that, like, it took me a second to appreciate, but when I appreciated it, I really appreciated it, is that they didn't use old-timey accents. They kind of just speak as if it were modern times.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which is kind of great because I think it makes it a lot easier for it to be really funny because all the jokes they hit, you know, appropriately.
Yeah.
Because we, you know, we speak that way. We understand the way that, like, the jokes that they're trying to crack and, like, the awkwardness of Abby Jacobson's, like, natural energy is, like, it's so funny, you know. If you liked Broad City, then you're going to love this because it's Abby, you know.
It's just
like,
Abby.
Yeah. Just being super awkward and super funny and, like, being the prank girl, you know. But, yeah, like, a lot of research came into the show. And, like, yeah, they basically through that research ended up sort of coming up with the character of Max, who is sort of like the opposite of Abby's character, because Abby stars in the show as well. And it's kind of a parallel between Abby, who is this white queer woman, and Max, who is a black queer woman. Yep. And like they sort of meet at the beginning, but then they go off in their separate ways. But just to give credit where it's due, Max is based on the three lives or the real lives of three women, Toni Stone, Amy Johnson, and Connie Morgan, who all were not obviously able to join the Rockford Peaches, but no. They ended up playing in like the Black Leagues and were incredible. So yeah, Max's storyline ends up being more about like, you know, dealing with her mom, who she lives with, her best friend, who is the freaking best.
Oh my god, I love plants.
Yeah, she's like a comic book nerd. She like writes and reads comic books, and she's like, you know, Max's other half, and like their like back and forth banter like is so relatable. Like my friendships are like that, you know, like giving each other shit and support, being supportive. And then she also has to deal with like, you know, potential homophobia or like just general misogynistic type of stuff that comes with being a woman in that time. So yeah. We get a lot of that storyline, and but her life is just like, I want to even have access to play baseball, like really play baseball, like yep. Just getting to the point of playing baseball, like that's her goal. That's how like kind of behind this world puts her. Yeah. Whereas Carson Shaw, who's Abby's character, is playing baseball in a professional league. Like she's already there. She's been pushed forward, like. Mm-hmm. Ahead of everything
because of her whiteness, right?
Yeah, exactly. She instead is then dealing with other things that Max kind of puts on the back burner, like queerness and like being respected as a woman and love. All kinds of other shit, right? Yeah, basically like what everybody struggles with today, right, is just like figuring your shit out in your relationships. So she's miles ahead. She's playing for this, you know, the Rockford Peaches, and, you know, like half her team is queer, but she doesn't know that.
Oh, man. I don't know how she doesn't know that, but okay.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, like she's never met anyone at that point who was openly queer, right? She just doesn't know anybody. You know,
yeah,
but you see the other ones, you see like the other characters, like the one played by Roberta Colindres, who shout out, she was in a couple of other shows that we covered.
Yeah, Lupe early on.
And Jess, who like they have like this like sort of bro ship going on that I think is like one of the funniest, best parts of the show.
Oh, they call each other brother.
Yeah, hermano. But they clock each other really fast, and they clock other people really fast, you know, like you can tell that they've been around a lot of more queer people and have that comfort. So it's pretty fun just seeing that. But you know, despite this being like a super queer heavy show, it's like not all about queer trauma and not all about coming out. It's just like really like complicated and real stories, but they get into everything kind of like that you talked about in Brava. They get into misogyny, where they have like catcallers in the audience, like completely throwing off Greta's game. Greta's another character I'll talk about later, yeah. Played by Darcy. And then being forced to wear like skirts on the field to play this game so that they can be more attractive and people will actually come. And then the coach, you know, yes, he's completely different than the coach from the film in that his misogyny is he's not wearing it on his sleeve, but it's still there.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just, you know, it's just more modern day misogyny where they like hide it and then wait until they're behind your back to talk shit, you know?
Modern day misogyny.
Yeah. A little more modern misogyny, you know what I'm saying? And then they also have scenes that are like about racism and how Max isn't even allowed to try out, which even though she's better than literally everyone on the field.
Everyone.
So. And also like, you know, a little hint of fat phobia here and there because you got to have it. We have this amazing fucking character, Joe DeLuca, who I'll talk about more.
Probably one of my favorites. I love Joe.
Joey. They have transness before the language existed for it. You know what I mean?
Like, yes.
They completely go there when they didn't have to go there. You know, and they also have I don't know, they do have the stuff that's about being queer. They have a scene where they kind of talk about being straight passing, but they're, you know, obviously they phrase it in like, you can't seem queer, they don't want you to look queer, and like you get fined for wearing pants in public and shit like that. So there's a lot of that, but I like that they're able to like play it off the way that people probably played it off back then. Like, it's a part of your life and you just kind of like, you take it, you know, like a man.
Like a man,
you
know.
You just fucking do this shit, you know what I mean? There's also, you know, they're able to balance that with a lot of like joyful scenes, like everything between Lupa and Jess being fucking hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
Like and Joe DeLuca at one point, I won't like spoil exactly what happens, but you know, someone tells her she's the most beautiful girl in the world. Aww. And she's like this like bigger like butch like, yep, lesbian, you know, like that was amazing to see. I'd never seen anything like it. And then just like Max and Carson, you know, going off in secret and like playing catch or having a catch or
being
whatever,
besties, yeah. Having a catch.
Yeah, being each other's like parallel universes. Yeah, it's great. But yeah, let's get back into Joe DeLuca a little bit, because I feel like she stole every scene.
Oh yeah,
she was so funny. Like, there's a scene where she's literally just like in the background and somebody's talking shit about her and she's just like, I'm a Leo, so everybody's
yeah!
attracted to my energy.
Oh my god, when she said she was a Leo, I lost my shit. I was like, glow, it got gayer. Did you see that? It got gayer somehow.
She's great. And then like that, there's her roommate asking her what her type is and she's like, blonde.
And she was blonde.
yeah I'm a blonde. Yeah, I mean, there's just like a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of joy and I was actually kind of scared because there's a scene that's probably the most joyful of all the scenes, right, where like Max and Carson are separately having these really beautiful moments with their separate queer communities that they've kind of found, and everything feels like too good to be true. And you're waiting for some shit to go down because it has to go down, right? Like, nothing's ever this good unless it's going to get bad.
Yep.
So, of course, it does go bad. But surprisingly, and I think very purposely, it's, like, the white queer side of it that gets their spot rated.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. But it kind of flips the script on what we usually see on screen because, like, you know, you're usually going to see, like, the more marginalized community
get screwed
over. Yeah, what they think is like more digestible or whatever to the audiences, which I'm glad we're flipping that script. And I'm also glad that they did that because I think it highlights their white privilege, right? Because if it had happened instead to Max's community, somebody would have ended up dead.
Period.
Whereas with them, it's somebody getting transferred out of the team, you know what I mean? Getting the easy way out, which is not, you know, a privilege that Max's people have.
No, it's over for them if, you know, you're black and you're trans. Like, it's over for you.
Yeah. So, yeah, Carson and Max kind of, like, they have this, like, parallel thing and they're separate. And they're both queer and everything. They have a lot of similarities. But what I liked the most, I think, about their interactions is that they were avoiding the white saviorism, you know?
Yep, they sure did.
Yeah, like, you know, you kind of expect at all turns that it's going to be like, oh, Carson's going to be such a cool guy and do things.
Integrate.
That, you know. Yeah, something.
Because
right?
At some point, like they make it a point to say that they needed a pitcher, and then they'll parallel that with Max being an amazing pitcher. And you're like, wait, are they integrating? Because that doesn't even make sense.
Exactly.
I'm glad they didn't, though, because like, if
it's
they're
not realistic too.
Yeah, they're trying to tell like a different story. They're trying to tell the truth as far as they know, you know, like that truth. And I think that's a more honest telling of it. It's obviously nothing is, you know, completely accurate, but I think that's a more honest telling.
Yeah, I think it was once again like highlighting the matter of the fact, and it's that like this other side of things, they are privileged. They're privileged enough that like she doesn't even think about fighting for her. She doesn't even think about whether or not she belongs in this team.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, whenever there was another moment where I was like, oh, it's gonna fucking happen, because Max is at the store and, you know, it's a like a white owned store, and the guy won't, you know, give her service, won't like let her shop there. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be the moment where Carson comes in and forces him to. But she made that shit happen for herself, you know? Like,
yeah.
She's been, you know, around the block a few times. She knows what she's doing, and she can take care of herself, and she doesn't need Carson to be her white savior.
Nope.
And also, like, flipping the script a little bit with Carson sort of being at Max's mercy, you know, like, in certain moments. Yeah, I think they just, like, they let the power, you know, shift in a way that allowed them to become friends. And it was very strategic, but it worked, which I really appreciated.
There was a really funny scene where Carson made an apple pie and took it to Max's, like, steel
Rockford mill screws. Job.
Yeah. And yeah. Clance says the funniest thing. She's like, there's a white woman walking up to you. Why is there a white woman walking up to you?
She's like, give me a second. And then she comes back and she's like, oh, she found my bag. And your pie?
Clance? More
it's,
Clance.
It's apple. I love that they didn't even go, like, those moments at the, like, tail end of each of those scenes, when it's between, like, Max and Clance, or if it's between, like, Jess and, like, Max or something, there's certain relationships where they end off the scenes kind of, like, going further than it needs to just for the funny part of it.
And they're so good at it.
Those moments. And they don't explain them away. You know, they just, like, say some dumb, funny shit, like, if it was Broad City.
Yes. And, but also, like, I really like how the show centers around friendship, not just, like, romantic relationships. Romance, right. Or, you know, here's, like, the moral of the story bullshit. No, like, a lot of it was friendship. And Joe's roommate ended up being, like, a mom. And I thought that was so sweet because she really embodied the character of a mom. Like, she was, I remember her telling another character, like, hey, like, you have to just accept people how they are, you know? Like, she's like, you think I don't know? She's like, I just accept people for who they are. And, like, she had such mom energy to her. And, like,
that's Maybell the blonde, right?
Was it Maybell? Yeah, Maybell the blonde. I loved her character because at every moment, once she said that she was a mom, it just all connected for me in that character because everything she did was very, like, we can do it, kids, you know? I was just like, this is really cute. And, you know, the what she called the chaperone of the team ended up, like, I really like that little, I mean, I knew what to expect from that character. I had a feeling with that character, but towards the end when you figure out her thing in the story, I'm not going to spoil it, it kind of all makes sense and lines up, you know? It just made me very happy that also the chaperone was more than an ally.
Bro, Maybell, like, in real life, I think, like, the person, she died a few years ago. She was a real player for the team.
Oh, shit.
At 95 years old, though, like, when they were in development of this show, she came out, like, in public because of this show and stuff. Like,
yeah, I heard about that she had, like, she had never said it before. Like,
yeah, publicly. Like, 95 years old, like, yeah. So I think it was, like, talk, like, they literally spoke to, like, real life players and previous cast and stuff, and they were like, hey, like, you know,
was it
us
gay?
Making, no, it was hella, yeah, gay. Us making all these people gay, it's like not even a
not
fantasy
the truth.
Or
it's,
like,
it's,
yeah,
the truth. They had consultants, yeah, consulting and agreeing, like, no, it was pretty fucking queer actually.
Yeah, they're like, no, I mean, like, there was a lot, and, like, of course they're highlighting those particular characters a lot too, right? So yeah, it seems like there's more than there is. But yeah, I mean, this show was freaking excellent. What can I say? Like, even finding out that the cast would play baseball together, like, for months before they started shooting, just to, like, get, you know, get to know each other and to, like, get good at baseball. That's fucking cute as hell.
More Clance forever.
Clance game. Just so good. It's like, yeah, imagine, like, watching the queerest show in the entire world and then, like, your favorite character is straight.
Leave me alone. I love her. She's just, like,
no, she's great.
She's amazing. Like, she's, like, also their body. Like, we were talking about Joey's character.
Body positivity.
We're talking about, like, you know, body diversity in a very real way. And, like, Clance is that bitch, and she knows it, and she's beautiful, and she's smart, and she's funny.
She's a nerd.
And I'm like, please, more of, like, characters like Clance in the world. Because, like, again, like, we're talking about, the character in Las Bravas, like, these are real people in the real world, and we don't see them enough on, like, screen, because they're just real people, and I'm, like, confused as to why we don't have more of just real normal people on screen, because, and by normal, I mean, like, we just don't see them. They're not, like, society's idea of what beauty is, at least not white America, but the rest of us out here and living in the real world, we like different kinds of people, so, like, I would like to see more kinds of people on screen, and... You know, Max is amazing as a character. Oh my god, she's beautiful. And they make, like, a reference to, like, a stud. And I thought that was so cool. She's like, yes. What do I look like? You look like a stud. I'm like, oh my god, I think you look like a
stud. Yeah.
White girls need to stop calling yourself studs. Please stop calling yourself studs. You're not studs, honey. You're just a mask or a butch. But you cannot use that word. Please don't. Yeah. It's weird.
I mean, speaking of those, like, kind of labels and how they bring in these modern concepts into, like, that time period, mm-hmm. they also talk about how, like, there's the in-betweens, like, there's the femmes, and then there's the masks, and then there's people in between. And when they said that in-between shit, I was like,
scene.
Yes, it's me.
Scene. It was like, oh my god, here we are in the in-between.
And we haven't even talked about it at all, like, the main... relationship/lash like love story
we haven't had this
with Greta, but you know, just however, very quickly,
it's great but it's not my favorite thing.
But you I go ahead. Like actually like hella scene, because like I too, you know, had a couple of weird romances with tall high femmes, and they uh-huh. also were, you know, very cautious when in relationships with me or whatever the fuck it was. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know, I felt like those relationships were incredibly relatable. And I loved seeing it, like the tenderness between them too, right? Because there's like all the shitty parts, but then there's that tenderness that like it's unmatched, you know. So
the closet, and I know the gays,
and the gays, like, I know they were living for that height, the height difference, you know, like the height difference.
Oh, you know, I was living for a height difference. It's involuntary, like there's nothing you can do about a height difference, you know, it just, it is what it is, and I love it. I was so seen, because I was like, oh my god, like look at her, she's like towering over this bitch, I love it. I'm that, like, yeah. I felt seen and understood.
Yeah, and if you're a fan of the old movie, like they have so many visual references to it, like so many, like some scenes that are almost verbatim, but like just throwaway sort of fun scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually thought that the old film period held up really well. It was very entertaining. Yeah, not as racist as you would think, you know, it's just like
not as racist as you would think.
I thought it was gonna be bad.
Well, I mean, they can't be racist if there's no black people actually on screen, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they just have this one moment that literally Max's whole storyline came from, where a black woman pitches to Gina Davis, and she is really fucking good pitcher, you know? So, yeah, that's all that we kind of get, which is why I said they take from these little moments where there could have been more. So, yeah, the old movie, it definitely holds up, though. It catches you in the feelings, you know.
I need to watch it. The most I know about it is, like, I knew that it mirrored Las Bravas. And I was like, well, Las Bravas is basically that, but, like, you know, Mexican. So I was like, I want to talk about that because it's new. And we're going to end up talking about it anyways because it's literally the same as Las Bravas, except, you know, white and baseball.
Well, just the coach storyline, yeah, but...
well, yeah, it being
also,
centered...
Also, Madonna is in it, you know what I mean? Like, there's a... And Rosie O'Donnell, and, yeah.
Rosie O'Donnell also makes, like, a cameo small role
Oh,
in
yeah,
she's
also... Yeah, she
we
sure
love
did.
To see it. Who else? They did make a reference to, like, Friends of Dorothy, which was, like, the secret code word that gay people had for each other. You know, it's Friends of Dorothy, and they did... I like how the Theo, Max's Theo... Max's uncle was, like, kind of low-key giving Max, like, the play-by-play of each city and, like, the gay queer community of each city around the United States. And I thought the inclusion of, like, a black trans character was super cool. And how, like, it was just kind of understood that it was, like, Uncle Birdie. Uncle Birdie.
Yeah.
Versus, yeah, you know, anything else. And it was so normal for Max. Max just automatically, well, you know, Max struggled for one episode and then worked through it. Because they were working through, you know, it's in the 1940s and it's a rough time. So they figured it out, but I feel like they didn't take that long to figure it out. And I thought it was so well done and they were so fly in their fucking suits, and I loved it. I loved every second. It was so nice.
Yeah. Not enough good things to say about this show. Honestly, just go check it out. I don't think we've spoiled it as much as we could have.
No, we didn't.
Yeah. It's great. I honestly don't think I can give it any cafecitos. It was an easy watch. It was beautiful. Mm-hmm. You know, them kind of giving the split time was like interesting.
Yeah.
I loved both of the characters. I loved even the moments that they got together. So I'm pretty excited for a second season. And even though it's not official, I know it's coming, like, in my gut.
Yeah. No, this one is like straight up five pan dulces, like more Max, more Clance. I don't know, the whole thing was just perfect to me. It's like one of the best things I've seen this year, one of the best series I've seen this year. I think Reservation Dogs and this show are like neck and neck. They're really just, they're telling incredible stories right now. And oh my god, everyone go watch League of Their Own, watch this show. I fucking love it. It was amazing.
Definitely. Yeah, but if you guys enjoyed those reviews, then maybe we'll actually start releasing more episodes.
there's plenty of stuff now.
There's some stuff. We just gotta like come up with some episodes for you guys. But you know, we've already got one recorded that's coming up for you guys in 2 weeks, and for Patreon in 1 week. So go check that out, patreon.com/CYC podcast or CYC podcast on Instagram and Twitter. But yeah, show notes will be on cabronasdechingonas.com as well as our other episodes. So yeah, if you are using us on iTunes, please leave us a review. Ooh, on Spotify too, I think.
You can leave a rating on Spotify. Five stars only. Thank you so much.
Bye, guys.
Bye.